You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Dermot Kennedy. It feels like an understatement to say that no one else has had a year like Dermot's, but it's true. Who could have guessed the new heights he's been able to reach in 2019? The countless sold-out shows that keep getting bigger and bigger, a rising number of Spotify streams that seems unimaginable, and a true devotion to his craft. A few weeks back, he released his debut album, Without Fear, a project that was a long time coming. On this episode of the podcast, it's a true privilege getting to welcome back one of Ireland's fiercest talents. Together we chat about his album that came to be, the madness of an upcoming Radio City show on the horizon, the stories behind some of the songs, and much more. This is the 405 Exchange with Dermot Kennedy. Enjoy. I know that day's gonna come. I just want the devil to hate me. Oh, I call and I rush out. All out of breath now. You got that power.
There's not many people out there who've had a wilder year than you, and honestly, it's been so well earned. It's a basic way to start a chat, but I genuinely want to know, how are you doing? Like, how are you feeling today as a human being?
Oh, nice one. I appreciate you asking. I feel good. I feel great because I had a great sleep. Tonight will be gig 8, I think, out in like 10 days. So that, I'm just looking after myself vocally. I took a few hours this afternoon just by myself to kind of not talk for a while, and then I'll start warming up soon. And but in general, I feel great.
Yeah, and it's so important. Like, I remember when we were hanging out like about last year and us just chatting, you said something really interesting. You were saying something like how as long as they keep adding gigs, you'll play them. And like, I believed you then. But you know, fast forward a year later where all these gigs have happened, like, could you have even expected it to be like this?
Yeah, I've definitely been put to the test in that regard in what I've said. It's been an incredible year. I've played some of the best shows of my life. And for me, like, moving through this industry where it's kind of, there's so much sort of room to like become a gimmick or to change in some way, but all I have to do is play music, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like I'm gonna be at your gig on Tuesday at King's Theater, and something I'm really keen for is that when I was with you at Irving Plaza, I was blown away by how attentive the crowd was. And I feel like, even, you know, fast forward to now, all the shows I've been to of other acts, I still feel like when I go see you on Tuesday, the way the crowd's going to be is going to be very specific to your type of show.
Yeah, I think so. And I think something like that is kind of cultivated over time. And what I mean is, like, at every point on this journey, you're faced with certain decisions. Like, you're faced with what songs to bring out and what you want your video to be like and what you do on social media and how you present yourself to the world. And every decision you make in the end will determine the people that are in the room. And that's very important to me. And so people often say that they come to a show and they're kind of struck by how sort of in tune the room is and how everybody's paying such close attention. But I mean, and it's easy to sound cocky when you say it, but like, that hasn't happened by accident, you know what I mean? I've kind of, it's taken like the guts of 10 years for me to get to where I am, and that's because I didn't take shortcuts, you know?
No, absolutely, and it shows. I really want to get into this debut album of yours, man, because fucking hell, finally.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, like, finally this debut album happened. You did it.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's a funny thing because you get to grips with these songs over time, and I knew the album as a project and as a bunch of songs for so long. And even when, after I delivered it, I kind of distanced myself from it for a bit because I didn't want to just stick with it and then go on tour for like an indeterminate amount of time, you know. Just I wanted to kind of put some distance between myself and those songs so I could be excited when I toured them. And But yeah, I mean, I'm just excited the album's out, you know. I spend a lot of time releasing just like singles and EPs, and so for to get to bring out a body of work, that means an awful lot to me.
No, it's a beautiful thing. And like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like some of it was made here in New York, right?
Yeah, probably the bulk of it. I wrote a lot of it with a friend called Scott Harris, who lives out in Brooklyn, and then we spent some time in like Mission Studios in Brooklyn, and we went to a cutting room in Manhattan, and there was just, yeah, we spent a lot of time working on it here. I lived in Brooklyn from like January through March making the album, and like the guts of it got made in New York. Yeah,
that's a very particular time to be here in New York, because like people always complain.
Really?
It is, yeah, because people always complain about like the snow and the cold and the dark and all that, but something that really always amazes me is that for the most part, people are still up for like a night out. Like people are still out to hang out and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. And it can be brutal. Like it was cold in January for sure. But yeah, I would love to go back. I want to spend more time there.
Yeah. Tell me this. Why was it important for you to create art here? Because at that point in your career, arguably speaking, you could have done it anywhere.
True. And also, having been on the road for such a long time and having been away for so long, like it was very appealing to kind of just retreat to Ireland for a while and make it, you know. But I don't know, I feel like you only get to make your debut album once, and so I wanted it to be as good as it could be, and for that I just thought being in New York was a very good idea, because I just feel quite inspired when I'm there. I feel like I'm inspired by the surroundings, by the people, by how vibrant it is. I know it's like a cliche thing to say about New York, but it is like such an energetic place, and that does feed into what you do, I think.
No, I agree with that. And like to just, you know, sound doubly cliche, like I've always been fortunate by the amount of traveling I've gotten to do, but it has been a prevailing thing that even when I go somewhere different and I take it all in, there's a little bit of me that goes like, New York is still unique in its own way. Like there's nothing like it, really.
100%, it's infectious. Like even, I was in Toronto the other day, and like, its downtown is almost like a sort of version of its own type of thing, like New York. But it's just, I don't know, it doesn't have the same sort of like gritty magic, you know?
Yeah, and for people from Toronto listening, he's not knocking you. He loves you.
Nah, I spend half my time there. Yeah.
So as a body of work, what do you feel? I know this is going to be a really big question, but I really want to explore it with you. What do you feel like the album says about where you are in your life, or better yet, where you were while you were making it? Like, what do you think it was you're able to capture in terms of an emotion within that album?
Yeah, I think maybe the one word I'd like to sort of come out of the whole thing would be resilience. Maybe I think it's like, because the album is just, it's kind of a story of my whole life, I guess, and it's a story of everything difficult that's taken place, everything dark that's happened, and then everything beautiful that's happened, and kind of flows into this journey in music and what the last few years have been like, and certainly some of the songs have been informed by that and are results of kind of what I've experienced. But yeah, I mean, I would like to think that through that story it could kind of just be like a resilient hope that kind of from track 1 to track 13 kind of gets bashed quite a bit but still exists by the end of it, you know?
I would definitely agree with that, and especially like, you know, like the beautiful thing about the album is that it kind of, for me listening to it, it was almost like water paintings, like how you have flecks of like water and color that's kind of being distilled and like saturated and desaturated, but it still comes together to make like a whole. Like I think that's like a very prevailing thing, where it's like you're still so much a person, like you saying resilience there, it's like you're still standing at the end of it.
Yes, yeah, and it's, yeah, I mean it's a funny thing, because there's certain songs there, absolutely love songs, 100% like songs of love and beauty and happiness, but I don't know, I think, I like, obviously, this is my debut album, so it's the first time I've kind of shot for a concept like this, but for me, it's just, I'm very glad I have that balance of, like, darker stuff and stuff that isn't necessarily as pleasant, so that it's not just kind of a happy-go-lucky album full of tunes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, my favorite song off the album, and it's always, it feels weird when you're going to say your favorite song off an album is a single.
Yeah.
But for me, it is. It's Power Over Me, because honestly, like...
No way!
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Because it's one of those tunes that honestly has stuck with me so much as the year has gone on. And, like, I think what I love the most about it is that there's so much emotion going on here. And when it, like, when it all comes together, it still feels very cohesive. It still is, like, telling a story.
Right.
Yeah. When it came to creating this one, how did you as a writer reconcile everything you wanted to say within this track? Because there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, so that's, I mentioned the cutting room in Manhattan. That's where this song got written and made. And it was, it's actually like a kind of a unique song within my discography, I guess, because it was the first time in my life that I started the song essentially with the title. And I had never done that before. My whole life, I waited for some lyrics that I cared about to kind of show up in my brain. And then I would write a song chasing that feeling. And I never worry too much about like concise verses and choruses and trying to make something as kind of concentrated as possible. I always, if it felt good, I did it, like lyrically and musically. But with this one, it was a new challenge for me because we started with the title. And so from a lyrical point of view, I just challenged myself to match that title with the chorus, with the verse, with the bridge, everything, and all to be a cohesive. And so, I mean, like, not to be kind of cocky, but I guess that song did an awful lot for me. So, I mean, it's probably something I should do more often, but it's like, that song to me is just, lyrically, it was me trying to tell the story of kind of the beginnings of falling in love. That's why it's at the beginning of the album. It was just sort of the early stages of a relationship where you can just kind of throw yourself in to be free from any inhibition or kind of fear of vulnerability, to just kind of go for it head first, so to be kind of lost in it. That's what I wanted to capture.
You captured it really fucking well. And like, you know, I talked to you about this before, but I think this track is a prime example, as well as some of the other songs off the album. You do this incredible thing where there are these feelings, these thoughts, these experiences that men will have that I think generally we won't talk amongst ourselves, even our friends. And you're able to put it in a song where it's like, I mean, it's universal beyond gender, like everything you're saying, but there's something in regards to me being a man that's like, has had a crush, fallen in love, has gone through all that, where when I hear a song of Power Over Me, I just feel like I connect with it on such a visceral level because you're singing it.
Nice one. I sometimes, yeah, I mean, obviously, when I was writing songs like 7 years ago, no one kind of was interviewing me, and so I never thought about what I did. I never analyzed it. It just, again, like I said, if it felt true and if it felt like a good idea, it went down. And so, yeah, I get asked these days, like, do I find it easy or do I find it difficult to sort of be vulnerable and to kind of expose my feelings like this? But I've never thought about it. And I think the best way for me to kind of keep going forward is to just not second guess it and just continue to do it. But yeah, no, I appreciate it. I mean, it's one of my favorite things when I'm playing gigs to look into the crowd and to see like a group of guys who, you know, for a fact outside of that room probably wouldn't ask each other about how they're feeling, and to see them kind of react in a very powerful way is a beautiful thing. Yeah.
No, that is an amazing thing. And you know, you saying that there, like that last bit there, I'm curious because, you know, like you've been like doing so many interviews and like talking to so many people as you naturally would with a job that you have. But, you know, I don't know if anyone's asked you yet, like in regards to that, the context about like, you know, the vulnerability and like people ask if you're comfortable with it or not. Are you fascinated? Like, how do you feel about people when they ask that? Like, is there a fascination there? Because I think something that we do as a society sometimes is that when we see something that's vulnerable, we tend to like go overly analytical on it a little bit.
Yeah, so do you think there's like a fascination on their part?
I think so, but I wonder if you're curious, like, is there a fascination? See, it's almost like a doublespeak type of thing. I wonder if you're fascinated by other people being fascinated, like intrigued.
Oh, right, I see. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's again, like, that's fine. I'm never kind of put off by the question or anything, but I think when I am asked the question, I'm almost sort of like, I'm vigilant in terms of like forgetting that I ever thought about it. You know what I mean? Because I make my best work when I don't worry about what I'm doing, when I don't analyze what I'm creating, when I just kind of go for it and do what feels right, that's when good things happen. And so I'm just kind of determined to keep doing that. I don't know. Like, I'd imagine there's a sort of fascination maybe on both our parts, but for me, it's just kind of, I think it's important. I just kind of try and keep things, especially with the industry kind of being as mad and hectic as it is, to just kind of keep trying to do things as honestly as possible.
Yeah, well, that's what I really respect about you, because, like, you know, like, following your career throughout the year and seeing how you've been navigating it, and, like, you know, the way you go about playing shows and interacting with fans, it's like, it's so clearly just about the music. And, like, it's so important for me to say that, because in 2019, it's very easy to have a career where that's an afterthought or that's the second thing you're thinking about. But for you, it's still the focal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, I want everything to be genuine, you know what I mean? Like, I did a tour of the UK there, and we did a show in New York as well, and the vibe of the shows was, we'd do like a shorter set, and then I would meet basically everybody who was at the gig and sign things and all that. And so it was amazing to meet everybody, but like, we did it for kind of 2 weeks straight, and what was on my mind was, I was thinking, like, I don't want it to get to a point where I meet somebody after a gig and it's not sincere, and you kind of smile in a fake way for a photo, but you still kind of feel like you're fulfilling your obligations as an artist. I mean, if it's not sincere, then you shouldn't do it. So to me, I just figured, like, I love meeting everybody, but I don't want to take it to the point that I just kind of have stock answers for things and I just sort of slap a smile on my face, because it feels amazing to actually meet people and talk to them properly about music, you know?
No, it totally does. You know, going off that, I want to ask about an album cut, The Corner, and I especially love where the song is placed on the album. I'm really keen to see it live, and I have a feeling I'll be seeing it live on Tuesday, so I'm happy about that. You know, so many of your songs to me, mate, feel like conversations. Like, that's one of the things I latch onto a lot, and with a song like The Corner especially, I feel like that's a main attribute of the song. So tell me, in regards to The Corner, who do you feel it is that you're singing to?
That's a funny one to kind of actually to hone in on, because I wrote a certain version of that, and I was happy with it. We were playing it on tour, all that. I was like, that's great, this is the way this song is. I just have to get in the studio and make it. It had a certain sort of like lyrical direction, but I was being quite vague, and I guess I was kind of hiding myself a little bit. And so I was in Brooklyn working on this song, and my friend Scott, he basically was like, this isn't direct enough. He was, and not in a kind of corporate like industry sort of like, it has to be direct to be a hit, because it's clearly not a hit song, but it was like, he was just kind of saying, like, you can't hide from sort of like saying the thing, and you can't hide behind like saying things like him instead of I, and like her instead of you, and all that kind of stuff. So he basically challenged me to kind of make the song as honest and direct as possible, and I did. And that's me kind of dodging the question of who I'm singing to, but just to kind of give you some background.
No, I mean, hey, I respect it, man. Like, cheers on that. And, like, you know, you still gave me something, so thanks for that.
Yeah,
I mean, but, you know, that's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Because, you know, when you think about even, like, books and movies, when they're, like, about certain people in certain instances, it's common practice for, like, authors and screenwriters to change names. And what I think is amazing about that is how that can happen and people can still connect. Like, people don't really need the specifics on a general basis, really.
Right, true, yeah, and it's funny, because if you spend enough time in, like, these writing sessions and studio stuff, like, I'm lucky now that I've got a creative team around me that I trust, kind of, they know exactly what my limits are and all that, and so it's this really healthy sort of atmosphere. But you can spend enough time in, like, random writing sessions with people you don't know who will tell you to, like, that it can't change from, like, he to you and him and us, and like, because I even, like, sometimes I'm determined to write lyrics that just sound the best. I don't even worry about things like that. I never have in my life. If it feels right and if it sings right, people sometimes neglect the idea of something like sounding right, literally, as like phonetically, when the way it works in the song. And I think you're right. I think people will connect with it, like, on a lyrical level, but also if you analyze the thing and sort of hammer it down until it lacks all feeling, then people won't connect with it in the first place. So
yeah, that's one of the things that's always important for me when I'm talking to someone like you, because, you know, we could geek out about specifics and studios and strings and all that, but, like, you know, at the core of it, the crux of it, there's that element of feeling, that thing that, like, really transcends and, like, makes people, I think, like, anytime someone stops over a song, like, because they hear a song, it's like, oh, there's a feeling going on here that I'm not familiar with, or a feeling that I am familiar with, but, like, haven't felt in my everyday life, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And that's not even necessarily someone being kind of moved to the point that they, like, cry thinking about somebody. Like, it can be to dance, it can be whatever it is, but you find in any genre, it's, like, the authentic stuff that really is quality and sort of stands the test of time.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me this, when you were working on the album, what was the song you were dying to have people hear the most? And I always like to bring this up from time to time, because, like, the process of, like, just writing and recording and then going on to, like, you know, mixing and then prepping the artwork and everything, it's such a long thing. Like,
yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, because I mean, yeah, I think about that, because say even the people I worked with on the album, they've been involved in things like this before, but for me it was a debut album, so everything I learned was essentially new. And that idea of having that much music basically hidden is mad to me. Yeah, because in the past I would have just released it, kind of, and so you play this waiting game, and obviously you wait until the right time to do it, but yeah, it takes a lot of patience, especially when you know you've done something special, and especially when you know you're at a point in your career when you want, like, you want people to hear everything you've got to offer, but yeah, you gotta have patience, but it's not easy.
Yeah, and, like, you know, I think it's very, I wouldn't say it's, like, super unique, but it is particularly unique in regards to you, because the way your career has developed and how it started and how you've grown has essentially been that, putting things out whenever you wanted.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and I mean, this is a plan I was kind of always in the loop on, obviously, and it's something we've worked on together. But yeah, it was funny back in the day, like, when you're just busking and playing in the street, and if you record a song, you put it out whenever. But also the drawback of that is that was a time in my life when I would put something out and about 10 people would hear it, you know.
it's amazing knowing how someone is listening to you saying that right now, and they have no point of context for being able to believe it. Like, they're like, what's he talking about? There was a time.
Oh no, definitely. I remember I used to check, like, my Spotify stats every day, and it was like 8 plays a day.
Oh man, you know what? Yeah. This is a bit of a random question, but I'm curious. Do you know the rapper Russ?
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder. Have you ever met up with him? Because, like, I think you guys would get on from just having that kind of similar background in a way.
No way, really. No. Yeah. I mean, I know him, and I've heard his stuff, but we've never met. No, we've never come into contact.
Yeah, well, that'll be a cool thing to happen when it eventually does. Considering, like, you know, just how small the music world is, it's something that's just bound to happen, really.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's guaranteed at some stage.
Yeah, I have a handful of questions left for you. Thanks, you know, taking the time, man. Seriously.
No, of course.
Yeah. I mentioned how last year I spent the day with you and your crew when you were playing at Irving Plaza, and stuff like that. That's stuff I never take for granted. It always feels like a massive privilege. And for that day particularly, it really sticks out to me because it was such a beautiful thing seeing how even then, how much you and your crew and your bandmates operated like family. And
yes.
I'm curious about, like, how you feel that bond has grown, especially after all this time.
Yeah, it's grown. Yeah, because, I mean, when was Irving Plaza? Was that, like,
February or March last year? Which is
last
wild.
Year. Yeah, that's crazy. And
that's so fucking crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's literally, like, the exact same people in the crew that were there at that time, plus a couple of new people who are amazing as well. And, yeah, I mean, I take it for granted, obviously, because it's all I've known as a touring artist, but I do, like, there was a thing yesterday, I was resting my voice yesterday, so I was just in a dressing room away from everybody for like a few hours, just kind of watched a movie or something, just to not speak. And I realized, I was like, oh shit, for most solo artists, this is what life is like. Like, you spend your day away from everybody and you're alone in what you do, and then you kind of all meet up to put a show together. And I mean, like, it's definitely a rude thing to say, because I'm sure there's loads of people who feel the way I do about like their crew and everything, but I'm so glad it's not that situation, basically. I'm so glad that, like, when we have a day off, we all hang out and we all do stuff together, and it's not this thing where it's just like 14 separate people on the road, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you brought up something interesting there, because, like, it's something that I started to witness pretty early on when I'd be around singers, especially female singers, who, like, for the majority of the day, spend the day not talking, so that way they can use the maximum of their voice. And, like...
Really?
Yeah. And I remember, like, I remember the first couple times of seeing that, thinking, like, oh, that's odd, from the context of not being around that on, like, an unusual basis. But then... I started thinking about you as the artist, and it's like, well, that has to be weird for you, like, not being able to talk as much as you probably would want to talk.
Oh, totally. And even the fact that you wake up and you go to talk and it like hurts, and you're like, oh great, I have to like be okay in 10 hours and I have to sing for an hour and a half. And so there's days when it's tough, yeah, but like also some days it's like, oh, I didn't get to do this today because I was resting my voice, etc., etc. And then you're like, yeah, well, technically, like, I don't know, it's just good to be balanced and to remind yourself that you're privileged to have a sold out gig in the first place, you know? Like, yeah. Touring obviously should be fun, but also, like, you've got to remind yourself that, like, you have to look after yourself and be disciplined, because at 9 o'clock that night, there's going to be, like, a few thousand people who paid good money to come and see you. So, like,
yeah.
if you're off your game because you were kind of having a laugh all day or the previous day, then you kind of, I don't know, you don't deserve to do a good gig.
Oh, you know what? Just hit me, because someone listening now is going to be going mad. But tell me this. What was was there a song on the album you're waiting to release that you were keen for people to hear? We kind of didn't touch on that bit.
Yeah, I think What Have I Done is probably the one I was kind of most excited about. And there's kind of a few reasons for that. I basically wanted people to hear that chorus, because I feel like it's one of the best things I've done musically, so just in a kind of selfish way. But also, musically, it was important to me, because I kind of constantly toe the line between like the singer-songwriter thing and then, and I guess, kind of like a pop, sort of hip-hop influenced thing. And so I'm constantly trying to balance that, and it always kind of, because that's where I started making music, it always feels like a personal little victory when I kind of feel like I've done well on the singer-songwriter side of things and the more acoustic side of things, and that's what that song felt like to me. So I was very excited for that one, yeah.
Well, as someone who has lived with your album for quite a while now, I could say that's a damn good song.
Nice one, thank you.
Yeah.
I feel like I hadn't done that before either, like with the marching snare drum, and it just felt like a kind of a sing-along thing, but still a decent piece of music. So I was happy with that one, yeah.
No, man, that tune is class. And I should probably also say for the people listening, in March, you're going to be touring again, and you're
yes.
playing Radio City.
Yeah. This is going to be a big one.
What the fuck?
I know, yeah. I've never even been there.
It's amazing.
Yeah, one of my favorite things, obviously I knew about Radio City, but one of my favorite things to do when I announce a tour is just kind of Google image all the venues. And I've just been looking at pictures of Radio City all week.
Oh, it's amazing. I've been there the past couple of days. I saw Massive Attack a few weeks ago, and I saw Casey Musgraves a few days back. And like,
no way.
Fucking hell, yeah. She's unbelievable.
Really? Yeah, I've never seen her.
Yeah, it's interesting. Her show is actually a lot more mellow than you'd think it would be, but she has such command of just the temperature of the room.
Really?
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it, when someone just has like a magic thing?
Yeah, it really is. But fucking hell, dude, you're gonna be doing that. Like, did you not believe it when they told you?
No, of course not. But like, also, it's important to be kind of, and I know you are, like, you seem very, very switched on, but it's like, it's important to be conscious, I guess. Like, we were talking about it. We played like Babies All Right in Brooklyn. Then we played Music Hall of Williamsburg. Then Irving Plaza. Then Brooklyn's Steel. Now we'll play King's Theater and then Radio City. And that'll be our sixth show in New York. And so obviously, like, I'm I'm in the minority in terms, like, they've been sold out every time, and we keep getting these big, massive rooms every time, and so I certainly don't take it for, you know what I mean?
No, yeah, of course.
It's like, I guess if it was this thing of, like, if you had some mad breakaway hit and it just became this giant thing and they were like, okay, we booked Radio City, that would be super daunting, but I feel like we've put the work in too, you know?
No, you completely have. And I don't mean this next question any form of disrespect. I just mean,
of course.
Like,
no, no.
Yeah, just general curiosity, because, like,
yeah,
you have been playing a lot of big rooms lately, and, like, do you feel like you're comfortable with it yet in the sense of, like, does it feel like at all like a muscle memory when you enter a big space?
Kind of, yeah. So we played the Olympia Theatre in Dublin, for the first time. Yeah, it's gorgeous, yeah. And we played that for the first time a while back. I can't remember how long, it's probably like a year or 2 years, but we played it for the very first time, and it's like maybe my favorite venue in Dublin, and it's just such a sort of, it's like such a special place. And so I was kind of like, shit, I'm playing the Olympia for the first time, this is crazy. And then on the next time we were playing in Dublin, we played four nights there, and when we checked in on the first night, we had played all these much bigger rooms since last time, and so this room that had seemed so sort of like out of my reach, and that I felt like I was kind of like punching above my weight even being allowed to stand on the stage, I was like, oh, this feels small to me now. And so and so you do adapt over time, but also, like, no matter what the capacity, it's just cool to get to play in pretty rooms, to be honest. I would much rather play to 1,000 people in a really beautiful theater than to play to 10,000 people in a warehouse, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, and then the thing is, like, our shows in Dublin this time are in the Three Arena. We're doing two nights, and wow. So that essentially is just like a giant room. And so then the onus is on us to have a special show, to have good production, to be able to kind of create that theater feeling within what is just a giant kind of hangar, you know?
Wow, dude, that's gonna be mad. Yeah. Look at that.
It's just important to kind of, I think, to not lose the intimacy of your gigs. I've seen some acts, like, I went to see Sigur Rós there and Elbow, and it was just, I felt like it was a really great example of, like, acts you'd love to see in a theater turning that arena into, like, a small feeling thing.
Oh, absolutely. I love Elbow, and if there's something they excel at, it's making those big rooms feel like essentially like a big bar or something. Like,
exactly, yeah. And I don't know, like, I'm sure there's certain tricks you learn along the way that kind of make it feel that way. Like, I remember when I saw them, they had this little walkway and they played some songs at a little upright piano at the end of the walkway, and so it made it feel small. So I'm sure there's things you learn along the way, but we'll see how it goes.
That's incredible. Well, I gotta let you run here. Before I do, I'm just gonna say, can't wait for Tuesday. I also am really glad that our mutual friend Talos is opening up for you. That's an amazing
Yeah,
build.
Beautiful music.
Yeah.
Yes.
And mate, I am dead proud of you, honestly. Like, this is
nice one.
It's really incredible seeing what's been going on, and like, you and your crew, you guys work really hard, and it couldn't happen to nicer people. So cheers, man.
Cheers, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Well, I'll see you on Tuesday, yeah?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, see you. Have a good one.
Have a good one, man. Yeah. See you later. That's all that love ever taught me. Oh, I call and I rush out. All out of breath now. You got that power over me.